Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, sponsored by Los Angeles Community Policing and the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Bill Murray. I founded those organizations. I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, and I am myself an adult survivor of child abuse. Joining me in just a few moments will be a panel of other people who are adult survivors or are interested in the issue of child abuse, and we're going to have an open topic night, which means that we invite the community right from the beginning, frankly from right now, to call in throughout the show to suggest a topic they'd like to talk about, to ask us questions, to ask us to talk about our own experiences or to relate something that's on their mind. Open topic night is an opportunity for the community to really engage with ourselves and with each other on the topics of child abuse, and there are many, many, many topics. We have hundreds of articles that we could go back and take a look at, and we may start that way too. But there are two ways to participate. One is by the call-in at 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. That's our dedicated phone number. It's the same number that's used every night that we do a show, and we do shows six nights a week, every night except Saturday night. So you could jot that number down and you could call in at 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 Central, 6 Mountain, and 5 Pacific. At that hour, we go live and you could actually listen to the show on your phone. And when you're ready, you push an additional number 1 and you'll get these instructions when you dial in to join us on the air. And a little symbol pops up next to the phone number that you're calling in on, and I know, as the person hosting the show and running the switchboard, that you want to join our conversation. The other way is to be in our chat room. If you go in our chat room without being a member at Blog Talk Radio, and what I mean by is having a login name at Blog Talk Radio, you will be listed as a guest. And while you're welcome as a guest, you can't type in a Blog Talk chat room when you're listed as a guest. So our recommendation, and there are instructions to this in the chat room right now, is we suggest you click on a sign-in or a login button and create a screen name that you like. If you don't have one, you just come up with something you like and a password. And when you verify that, it'll recognize you in subsequent visits, and you won't have to log in every time you come to the system. As soon as you come in, it'll automatically put you in the system under that screen name, and then, of course, you can type in a chat room under a screen name. But guests are certainly welcome. They just can't type themselves. But we suggest that you go ahead and get a screen name at Blog Talk. This is not our rule. It's their rule. However, we do use a chat room with every one of our shows, while some producers choose not to do that. We always do. But we're interested in community participation, and that's why. Which is why we always run the chat room, and there's some element of call-in. And tonight, right from the top of the show, we'd love to hear from you at 646-595-2118. And joining me now is panelist Carol D. Levine from New Jersey. Carol D. Levine, we always use her middle initial, is an author, whose books are easier to find if you use her middle initial. But they are available everywhere, such as Amazon. And the book we want you to look for is Panic Child, the harrowing true story of sexual abuse and neglect, which is Carol D. Levine's autobiographical work that she wrote a few years ago now. She's about 30 years into her recovery. Most of the time considers herself about 85% healed. and so we welcome to the air Carol Levine. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Bill. How are you tonight?
I'm okay, thanks.
That's good.
Yeah. And are you at 85% or more or less today?
We'll stick to the 85.
Hey, that's pretty good, though.
That's good. I'm not complaining. Not complaining. It could be worse, right? Yeah. Go ahead.
That's what I always say. I can't complain. People say, yeah, because it wouldn't do any good. I say, no. I say I can't complain because, yeah, things could be better, but they could be a whole lot worse.
That's right. That's right, Bill.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's an open topic night, and I don't have anything in particular prepared. I don't know if you do or not. Do you have anything you'd like to start off with? Or
no, not really. But I will say one thing. I was over in Easton again today. I go over there quite a bit. And I noticed a couple of interesting things. I was walking by this beauty salon place, and I noticed in the windows are these little square papers, and they were pink and white. So I thought, well, what are these little square papers? A little bit the size of a sticky, type paper. And here it's for breast cancer, and people can, donate, however much they want to donate. One was $1, one was $5. They had many, many, many all over their windows. You could barely see in. And that was for breast cancer. Now, that's not selling, like pins or anything else. It's just simply people donating to a cause, which is a very worthy one. Don't get me wrong. So then I went over to Arby's, I guess you call it. I was with my husband. He likes Arby's. I don't, but he does. So we went in, and they were asking people to donate for the hungry. And we were saying the other night that, actually you brought it up, that 1 in 6 children in America go to bed hungry.
That's right.
And that's a horrible, horrible thing, because I've been there and I know what that feels like. And those children knows what it feels like. So there are ways for people, to donate, when the time comes. And you don't have to sell pins or T-shirts or cups or anything else. It's just a matter of asking and people donating and people out there. Let me tell you something. There are a lot of children who are being beaten. There are children who are hungry. There are children who are being sexually abused. There are children who are dying every day of neglect, or they're living that lifestyle of neglect where they're not getting the proper care. And those are all, worthy things to donate to. Our country is in a terrible, terrible state of order right now. Very shaky foundation. But our children are in a very, very bad situation as well. And ever since the Penn State, thing that happened there, there is a lot more awareness. And I want that to not die ever, because it's not going to go away, okay? This is something we're trying to put a dent in the statistics of, because many of our children, 1 out of 4 girls are being sexually abused, and 1 out of 5 boys, or 5 or 6, a little controversy there, before the age of 18, okay? These are staggering statistics. And when I tell people these things, some of them want to hear, some don't. Most do. They will listen. I have a lot of, I'm doing a lot better out there with the people, because their eyes are being opened now. Now we need for their hearts to open. And we also need, too, for them to become proactive.
Right. So we need their hearts open. Right. Go ahead.
Well, I was handing out more cards, and I have ordered more from Carl, because this is something that I very much believe in, to get the awareness out. This is certainly one way of doing that. So I continue to do
every
that.
Every time you say that, you have to explain what you're talking about for people who don't have any idea what you're saying.
This is true. We had the Blue Ribbon Campaign, and with the Blue Ribbon campaign, which is a very, very good campaign that Bill came up with, people can, for a very small price, they can purchase Blue Ribbons and these cards. On the cards, they have statistics and also a number that I very much believe in, and that's the 1-800-4, a child number. If you see a child being abused, or you think that a child is abused, rather, you call that number and they'll help you. If a child is being abused in front of your eyes, of course, you call 911. But if you consider the fact that maybe there might be a child down the street, or you have a gut feeling like many times we get, that a child's being hurt, but we're not 100% sure, you can call that number. So this card has a little bit of this and a little bit of that of information, and certainly our website, which takes you right to where we are now as we're speaking, the radio show. And with our website, we have a wealth of information, and so it's a very, very good thing that we have. We also have papers that we hand out that have even more information. So I always go well-stocked, and whether it be...
Right. You as an individual are using the Blue Ribbon campaign by way of distributing blue ribbons, and in each case you hand them one of these business cards that mm-hmm. you're talking about. So they get a ribbon and a card, as an acknowledgement of your awareness of child abuse and your desire to spread it. You hand these to people, and then they can put the ribbon on or not, but they can put the card in their pocket or leave it on their desktop or their dresser and look at it later, and it's informative because it gives a few statistics, as you say, the highlights of the statistics, and some emergency numbers to call, a national number. Plus, yep. It gives us our website and some other things. So, and that's what you're talking about is the Blue Ribbon campaign. We send them out in groups, and along with the groups of cards and ribbons, there's a packet of information that travels with them. That's mainly to be used for. The concept is that perhaps you'd like to hold a public safety meeting where the topic of child abuse could be the topic, and for discussion on an agenda item on the agenda that night. For example, at a neighborhood watch meeting, or a Lions Club meeting, or a Kiwanis Club, or a church meeting, or whatever kind of meeting, and the leader would have then this bigger package of information that contains even more statistics, a lot more resources and information, plus some bullet points that can be topic discussion points during the meeting, and you hand out the ribbons and the cards.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what that's all about. And the Blue Ribbon campaign is something that we've been doing since last year. During the last year, and we'll always continue doing it. But it's right on the front page of our website and explains, I think, fairly well that we do this at our cost. And we, at this point, are asking people to make a small payment, which is identical to the cost of the printing of the cards and the mailing of the cards, first-class mailing it to you. Because everything we do out of our own pocket. We're not supported by anyone else. We have no grants, and we don't have any fundraising mechanism, nor have we sought one until now. Mm-hmm. This is not a fundraiser. It pays for itself when you buy a packet of 50 blue ribbons for $20-something, but it's a great way to make a contribution to your community. For $20 to as far as outreach to the community, and the wearing of the blue ribbon, of course, is a symbol for child abuse awareness. Mm-hmm. That's the color for child abuse, just like yellow is for veterans issues, and pink ribbon, as you said before, the pink color is for breast cancer. So the blue ribbon is known now nationally as the color for child abuse.
When I had gone to that party over the weekend, there was a lady that was wearing a purple, a blue-black-purple type of ribbon. And that's something we don't talk about too often either. And that is
domestic violence.
Right. That's for domestic violence. All of which you have to understand, too, is children who are watching their parents pulverize each other, That certainly is, you know, domestic violence, and that's child abuse as well.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, you bet. So she was wearing her ribbon, and I was wearing my ribbon. I have pictures to send you. I'll be doing that pretty soon. But anyway, I was with quite a few people, and I spoke a lot about what we do on our show and what we represent. And we're trying so hard to get the word out there for people to understand just how bad this situation is. I mean, it's sickening because I started, you know, talking about the statistics that we have. And this is from the CDC. These aren't just, you know, statistics that we get out of the air. This is from the CDC. It's from the Justice Department. It's from the Missing and Exploited Children. And, you know, so people then were listening. It was a party, all right? It was a party, so I didn't want to get too heavy. So we were there to have it was a big birthday party, and had a wonderful time. But I certainly wanted to get across to these people, to anyone that I can come in touch with, in contact with, exactly what's going on, because it's every bit as important, you know, as the economics. People don't realize that. You know, they don't realize that because what we're thinking about now is a new president who's going to be voted in sooner or later. And all that other, and that's something to think about, you bet. But by the time this show is over, many children will have been abused, many, many children. And by the time you go to sleep tonight, that I don't know how many more, but it's just ridiculous how many are abused each day. And so it's something that, you know, people do have to understand.
You know, every 10 seconds there's a report of child abuse being made in our country, either by, you know, phone call or email or whatever, but every 10 seconds. And so every minute there's six more calls being made. Our show goes on for 90 minutes, so multiply that 6 times 90, it's hundreds and hundreds of children whose abuse will be reported, or at least a case of suspicion that will be reported during the course of the show. And, of course, we're talking about, when we talk about child abuse on our show, we are including other than sexual assault. We certainly include sexual assault, obviously. Mm-hmm. And that is the figures that you talked about before, the 1 in 4 girls and the 1 in 6 boys will be sexually assaulted. That's not the at-risk group. That's the group that will be sexually assaulted before their 18th birthday in our country right now. But a similar number or even bigger number will be traumatized through violence or physical abuse. And then the third type is emotional trauma, which could include something like growing up in a household where you're witnessing a lot of violence in front of you. You may not be the object of the violence, but you're watching it, and that's very traumatizing. Also, bullying could be included as emotional trauma. And then finally, neglect. And neglect, you know, kills 5 children a day, a lot of them from starvation or from shaken baby syndrome or from being beaten to death, but 5 a day at least. And when you think about it, you know, we do hear mention in this political season of how many soldiers we've lost overseas in the wars we've fought. And, of course, it's horrible. We've lost 6,000 troops in the wars over there, but we've lost at the same time period somewhere between 20 and 25,000 children who have died of child abuse. During the same time, we've lost that 6,000 soldiers. So, you know, when you really have to think about it, these are children who didn't volunteer for this. We have a volunteer army, and God bless them. I'm not putting the army down, obviously. But children are completely vulnerable, and it falls to those of us. You know, you talked about opening people's eyes.
Yeah.
And maybe this Sandusky case did that, and then now you're trying to open their hearts.
You bet.
And I want to go further. I want to get them to move their feet. You know, I want this to become a movement, you know, a cause, similar to the kinds of causes that are continuing to make this country great, when we had the civil rights movement, and we had the women's rights movement, and we had the gay rights movement, and so forth. We periodically have these causes that are not very popular to begin with that gain in popularity, and all of a sudden become, you know, the catalyst for big changes in how our country perceives people of color or people of an opposite sex or people who have a sexual preference that's different than ours. And we have changed our opinion about this, but not without it first being a topic that sometimes we didn't even want to talk about. And that's what child abuse is. It's a topic that people prefer not to discuss. Thank you very much. It's a taboo topic. Like cancer was at one time, when you and I were growing up, they called cancer the big C. It was a secret. When people got cancer, did you hear? What? You didn't hear? No. Look, she has the big C. Oh, no. You know, we did not want to discuss it. And over time, it became not only a topic to discuss, but a topic to throw a lot of money towards research. And we're making big strides towards, you know, lots of prevention and treatment of cancers of all kinds. And same thing happened with the AIDS epidemic. When in the 80s, it wasn't our problem. It was a problem that only affected the male gay population from the inner city. Well, no, it turned out to be a much bigger problem than that. And over time, and it took a while, mm-hmm. we came to be able to talk about it. And as a result, a lot of resources were put into it, and it became obviously not just a gay person's disease. and these are the kinds of things that have to happen. Well, I see the issue of child abuse, as you know, Carol, as the civil rights issue of our time that has not yet been addressed, really. Mm-hmm. It's a taboo topic that, you know, we can't seem to bring ourselves to really talk about, and that's what we need to be doing right now. It is, after we open our eyes, we need to open our hearts and our mouths and our feet. And right. we need to be, you know, getting into action, all of us, the whole country, about, you know, how we feel about losing what the CDC estimates is possibly 50% of our children to one of those four kinds of trauma. Right. You know, and it's an issue that affects those children for the rest of their life. In some cases, very, very badly for the rest of their life and every aspect of their life.
You bet.
To me, it's an issue that, you know, that denies a child the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness at the time they're traumatized. That's what happens, and it doesn't go back. It's a civil rights issue. You could also call it a human rights issue. You could also call it, you know, a child issue, obviously, or a healthcare issue. Even some people want to put it in the healthcare category, and you could talk about it in terms of money, which the CDC, again, as a source came out last year, they said it cost $120 billion to fight all the different aspects of child abuse. And this year they revised the way they presented their figures. They did an additional year's statistics, and instead they looked at it a different way, and they said over the course of the lifetime of the children who they studied from 2008, which is the most recent complete year of figures they have, mm-hmm. that they estimate there will be a cost of $558 billion of lifetime expenses for that 1 year's worth of children to deal with their issues and including law enforcement and incarcerating the perpetrators and taking them to trial and trauma recovery processes like counseling costs and health care costs, loss of wages, mm-hmm. and so forth. Altogether, it's a big number. $558 billion is a gigantic number. So maybe that's what some people need to hear, mm-hmm. That this is killing us in terms of the numbers that are being spent on it too, because that number, of course, is repeated every year.
Right.
Every year.
That's every year.
Right. We are adding to the number of children who are sexually assaulted. 775,000 additional children become adults every year, mm-hmm. and an additional similar number are traumatized. At least an additional similar number. And by the way, we always tell people these are conservative figures because child abuse is one of the worst reported crimes, the least reported crimes, so they're the best we can do. But we know that maybe 1.5 million children become adults each year out of their childhood. They become 18 and therefore they're no longer categorized as children but as adults. So that's how we're now at, you know, we keep growing the number of adult survivors by that number every year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, minus however many pass on, obviously. But that statistic is growing at an alarming rate, so that the 42 million American adults who have already been traumatized by sexual assault, and an additional number by the other, you know, similar number, you know, add up to tens of millions of American adults, maybe 25 to 30 something percent of our population having been traumatized in their youth. And this is costing our country, from whatever angle you want to look at it, a tremendous amount.
That's right.
And it is a representation of, you know, our civilization, basically, how we deal with this as an issue.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, Bill. The party that I had gone to, some of the people know me, and they, of course, they knew that I had written a book, and they know some of the places that I worked at. And then, of course, there was a lot of people there. They were from car shows. They were really cool people. I like looking at the old cars. So we had, you know, bikes and we had cars. It was very, very interesting, a lot of fun. But a lot of people have been abused, and a lot of times they keep their mouth shut. See, this is a part of the problem, which is what I was trying to explain. You know, when you've been abused, whether it be sexually, physically, emotionally, or from neglect, or all of them, in my case, God's sake, I don't know why I'm alive. If you don't report it, if you don't tell people about it, then that person who's abusing you is out continuing to abuse. He doesn't, or she, now remember, it can always be a she. I was talking a lot about that on Sunday, too. Not just he, it could be she. You know, I wasn't the only victim. You know, the person that was abusing me for some years there, from 6 to 7 and a half, after I got out of that situation, that house of horrors that I like to call it, that person just went to the kid down the street. You see, it just goes on and on and on and on and on until that individual is incarcerated or they die or someone kills them. I hate to put it that way, because in that particular case, that's what almost happened to that particular individual. So then the lady that I was speaking to who was wearing the ribbon, I had told her, too, that by the time I was 9 or almost not quite 9, I had been kidnapped and raped as well, because I'd moved to New York and with a new stepdaddy, mommy, and my brother, and waiting for father, my biological father, for Sunday visitation rights, and I was kidnapped and raped. I'd gotten too close to the street, guy pulled me in the car, and away we went around the island. And he viciously raped me. I don't know. He didn't kill me. He almost killed me. He killed my spirit. You know, he killed my heart. He killed everything. You know, I was like the most frightened child in the world. And I thought that from 6 to 7 and a half was bad enough with a dirty uncle. That was bad. But the other one was bad, too. When children are abused like that, a part of them dies. That's why it's like murder. Okay, it's
right.
Like murder, because that child, like with myself, I certainly lost my childhood. I ended up having post-traumatic stress disorder, and I had to live with it for years. So I was telling people about this, how whether it be domestic abuse or whether it be physical abuse, you know, and on yourself or you're watching it, or whether it's sexual or whatever of the abuses that we speak of on this show. This affects, it alters a child's life. And if that kid doesn't get help, they end up in trouble. I turned to alcohol and drugs by the time I was 15. I was certainly drinking an awful lot because I am a panic child. I was suffering so horribly from panic attacks, and I didn't know what to do with them. And coming from a dysfunctional family who didn't care, that I was having panic attacks and they were so dysfunctional themselves, I had to self-medicate. And people do that. They do that by drinking and drugging, and that's only a temporary fix, and it doesn't. In fact, it makes it worse, okay? Then you have those that get into trouble, like a lot of my friends did. Some died. I watched them shoot up heroin. You know, I used to watch Chain Fights and Neck of Newark. Isn't that cute? You know, I could go on and on. It's amazing that I'm alive. It really is. It truly is, because I had so many things happen to me, too. And this is what we talk about.
Well, now there are other ways that it can manifest as well. But the point is that even children who are abused only one time, and I say only one time because you and I were abused many, many times, each of us in many different ways. And people who look at or listen to either one of our stories would say, well, that was pretty severe. But frankly, what we know is that even children that are abused or molested or sexually assaulted, for example, only once, it is traumatizing for the rest of their life to some degree. And this is an amazing thing. It doesn't matter how often. It's not a matter of how much. It's not a matter of how many different people. It's a matter of whether it happened or not. It starts to alter your life from that point on. And its manifestation can be, as you say, a turning to inappropriate substance abuse, substance use, so that because we hate how we feel as a rule, mm-hmm. we hate who we are, so we want to change how we feel about ourselves. That's one thing, but it can also manifest itself in perfectionism, which is another thing. We don't talk that much about it, but because it's the minority experience, mm-hmm. most people will go to a destructive side of themselves, destructive by overeating, for example, or by spending money they don't have, becoming a gambler or a drinker or a drug user, or hanging out with lower companions. But other people will go the other direction and become a perfectionist.
Mm-hmm.
And this is especially true if they live in a lot of fear about the environment that they grew up in. They're going to continue to have that fear in adulthood. And we know people who absolutely got straight A's as a result of their trauma. They did not want to rock the boat. Mm-hmm. They never argued with anyone. They never even opened their mouth. They just did their work, and they became perfectionists. And how it manifests in a perfectionist is it manifests in stress, mainly, some kind of stress. And we all know that stress is one of the markers for cancer, for example.
Oh, yeah.
So, you'll find people who have cancer whose the root of their problem may have been the abuse that they encountered in their youth decades before,
And heart trouble, too, Bill. There's always, with all this stress that people are under, because they haven't told the secret, as we call it, okay? They're walking around knowing that they've been sexually abused or physically abused or all the abuses that we speak of, and they haven't spoken to anyone, and that does terrible damage to the body. It just simply does. I've mentioned once before, and I'll mention it again because it is important. A lot of people, I'm not going to say all people, but a lot of people who walk around with fibromyalgia, at one time, people used to scoff at that. Oh, well, they're just one of those people who think they're sick all the time or something. They're hypochondriacs, whatever. No, they've done studies on it. They've actually done studies, and they have come to the conclusion that many people who suffer from fibromyalgia have been abused in one of those categories or all those categories or some of those categories. And this is the body screaming out, hey, I'm hurting. Well, it's the brain's hurting too, okay?
Well, that's another place that it manifests itself, as you know, and then we have an article about that under our future articles, The Bomb in the Brain, that shows that the brain begins to develop differently. The child, at the moment of their traumatization, the brain starts to grow different than the normal brain. And you can tell the brain of an adult who has never been traumatized as opposed to one who has been traumatized simply by doing brain scans often. Mm-hmm. Side by side, there are parts of the brain that overgrow, and there are parts of the brain that undergrow, and there are parts of the brain where the pathways never develop. Between one thing and where they're, in a normal pattern. Because a child's brain is so malleable at that age, as is the rest of their body, our brain continues to develop until we're 25 years old. So all through our youth, the brain is still developing, and it's easy for those who know what they're looking at to look at two side-by-side MRIs of, say, someone who's 40 years old and tell you which one was the abused child.
Yeah,
because their brain is different.
That's
so
right.
So different that it's remarkable. This is all explained under the article called The Bomb in the Brain, and it's a result of the ACE studies, pretty well-known set of studies. We have that article under our feature articles from earlier this past year, this current year. It's a video set of five videos, but if you only have time to listen to one of the five, listen to video three, and you'll understand what I'm talking about, of that series of five videos, Bomb in the Brain.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. It affects, you know, it also, you know, is easy to do studies that indicate that an awful lot of people who are now in jail or in prison,
mm-hmm.
criminals, have child abuse in their past.
That's right.
And we don't know the exact way to link the two, but we know that there is a correlation because, you know, they're way out of proportion with the normal population, meaning that there's many, many more, percentage-wise, criminals who have experienced child abuse than you would find in the normal population. So these are really well-known statistics in the community that you and I deal with, but it's the kind of information that we need to get out to the regular community because we want them not to open up their eyes, but also their mouths and their hearts, But we also want them to open up their mouths, share this information with others, and then their feet, and get active. And because until we activate the regular community,
mm-hmm.
the community, not the community of adult survivors, are not very many of us who are enough in recovery and feel comfortable, you know, talking about it. But if we can transmit this need to discuss this as an open topic, not a taboo topic, and get a primary topic for discussion anytime public safety is going to be brought up, there's no community in our country that escapes this. None. It's in every society. It's in upper class, middle class, and lower class groups. It's in urban, suburban, and rural society. It's in black, white, brown, yellow, and green society. It's terrible in the Indian community, the American Indian community, the indigenous community,
mm-hmm.
And it's rampant in the foster care system. So there is no group. It doesn't matter what religious background you're from, how much money your parents made, you know, or anything, or what sex you are. It affects
mm-hmm.
girls and boys. Throughout our society, in every corner of our society, and it's right under our noses. And if you think you don't know children who are being abused, you're being naive. Because if you look around your block, and you look at the kids that live on your block, three or four of them are being abused. Three or four of them. If you have, if you have a neighborhood that has 25 kids in it, then three or four or five of them are being abused. That's the percentage. Of people that are abused, and it's happening everywhere, at epidemic or even pandemic, you could say, you know, rate. So if you can hear these statistics and not take an action, God bless you. But I believe that every adult has a responsibility to every child. And we all have to play a role. If we really do think we live in the greatest country in the world, we should take a look at how we treat our children. The fact that 1/6 of them are going to bed hungry, that 5 will die every day of neglect, that every 10 seconds someone will be making a call or sending in an email or a report of child abuse, I think these are astonishing and shocking figures that anybody could agree should be waking us up and making us get active.
That's right, Bill. You couldn't have said that any better because, you know, our children are at risk here. They're at high risk. I like to read the comments under some of the things on the Huffington Post. I go on that a lot because there's a lot of articles that I send in. And like one of the articles today underneath one of the comments, a person had said, "No child is safe today." Well, okay, that's a big, bad statement. But there's also a lot of truth in that statement because there's so much trouble out there for our children, with our children, that things are happening to our children And when I was at the party the other day, people said to me, well, it was like one person actually said this. They said, aren't you being like a little bit overboard, do you think? And I said, no. I said, when you get home and you go onto your, you know, computer, you know, I gave him a card, and I said, type this in, you know, the www.nasca.org, and I'll bring you right to our website. And I said, and go on to, you know, the buttons there, the recovery buttons and the resource buttons and so forth and so on. We have tons and tons of wealth of information. And then come back and talk to me. We'll talk about it. And then you tell me whether our children are at risk, how many are at risk, and if maybe I'm exaggerating. There is no exaggeration here. I wish there was. I wish there was. And this is what keeps me going, Bill, is the fact that you and I know the stats. We know what's going on out there. And it's even more than the stats. We know the people. We know how pedophiles behave. No, you can't look at a pedophile and say he's a pedophile or she's a pedophile because, as we've said before, they look like you and me. I know I'm not a pedophile. You're not a pedophile. There's nothing that makes a person look like a pedophile, which I was explaining to a couple people on Sunday. Because
right.
They, you know, they were thinking about, you know, the guy or you know, and the trench coat type thing, that type of mentality. Because
right.
This is, yeah, if there was ever any discussion on it some years ago, this is what people thought of. Well, that's not the way
right.
That it is, you know. Pedophiles look like anyone. They look like the guy next door. You just never know.
Well, they are the guy next door. Is
the point. Sure.
That's another thing that I try to tell people. When I tell them that it's impossible for them not to know children who are being molested right now or adult survivors who have been molested, they just don't know who they are. But it's impossible by statistically looking at the numbers to imagine that you would not know quite a few of both categories. It's also probably statistically impossible that you don't know some pedophiles. But again, you just don't know who they are.
Mm-mm.
They're so clever at hiding among us, and they are us. They're in every walk of life, especially if that walk of life has anything to do with children. They'll pick careers or volunteer opportunities that put them in close contact with children. They'll do that deliberately because they don't want to miss any opportunity to groom the community into thinking they're the best neighbor, they're the best volunteer, they're the best teacher, they're the father, you know, who loves his children, they're the best soccer coach, whatever it is. They're the one that always says, I can give the kids a ride home, you know. and they're doing that right under our noses. And then they're picking out the children that are the most vulnerable among the kids they come in contact with. They don't molest every kid.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's good. It should be good news to parents that if your child is prepared, and this is what we talk about with prevention, if your child has attended some prevention program, whether it's through the school system or the church or a club they go to, or if you teach it to them themselves, they will have a degree of knowledge and power and some self-esteem that they will know that they can come to you or to an adult, an appropriate adult, with a problem they're having and express it then, not wait for when they're 40 years old to bring it up. It's the strong kid who will be avoided, in other words, by the pedophile. It's the weak kid that they'll gravitate to, the kid that seems less sure of himself or herself.
Mm-hmm.
The kid that hangs back from the group, the kid that never gets picked for the sports,
mm-hmm.
the kid that has low self-esteem or suffers from insecurities, those are the kids who need attention. And that's one of the things that that pedophiles know. If you give attention to a kid that needs attention, sometimes they will accept your attention, even if it's inappropriate. And especially if you teach them during the time you're touching them, and they don't grab you all of a sudden. You know, it starts with favors and being nice and then occasional touches and hands on the shoulders or the back and so forth. And it might build up to, you know, to something more serious. But by that time, the child himself or herself can be groomed to believe that it's their fault and that they can't tell and that they shouldn't tell. They better not tell, some of them are told, or else something will happen to their sister or their parent or their parents will be very disappointed in them if they find out. And no kid wants to disappoint their parent, you know. I didn't, anyway. Or many kids don't. Most kids don't. They want approval, and they want acknowledgement, and they want care, and they want attention. It's those kids that are needy in all those categories that get the attention from the pedophile. They're not getting it somewhere else. And if they haven't been taught ahead of time that, you know, not everybody in the world has best intentions. And when you feel uncomfortable about something someone's doing, especially if they're touching you in certain parts of your body, or if they're making you do things that embarrass you or make you feel bad, then you should come and tell an adult. And if that adult doesn't help you, you should tell another adult. And if that adult doesn't help you, you should keep telling an adult until you find an adult that does help you. And kids that know that are armed ahead of time. They're prepared ahead of time. They have a knowledge base ahead of time that, you know, I didn't have. I had no idea what was going on when the first guy touched me. I had no idea. Pedophiles are us. You're right. You know, don't be surprised what they look like. They look like you and me.
No, that's a God's honest truth. I wish they did walk around with something different where people could say, okay, there goes a pedophile. But that's just not the case. With my uncle, he was a well-dressed, well-behaved, clean-shaven man. And he worked in the city. He had a good job. He worked in New York. And, you know, no one would ever dream that he was a pedophile, you know, that he was coming home every day and molesting me at 5 o'clock in the morning before he went to work. I mean, you know, who would know until I finally told? See, we have to get our children comfortable enough, too, that where they feel, you know, that they can tell. It's all right to tell that these sick people out there who tell you they're going to kill your dog or who's going to believe you? Just a snotty-nosed kid, you know? No one's going to believe you. Look at me. Look at how I am. They're going to believe you. You're just a kid. You're a brat, you know? This is how they speak to them many times. And children take that to heart. And they say to themselves, well, yeah, he or she is right. No one's going to believe me. And, you know, a lot of times the abuse, which another thing I was speaking about, happens right in the family. Duh, my uncle, like I'm speaking about. It can be a brother, it can be an uncle, it can be anyone, it can be mother, father, whomever. These children need to know. They need to know that they it's all right to tell on them. And that's why we're trying so hard to get all this information into the schools, like with the Erin Merron Law. I so admire what she's doing. Because, I think she's great. And quite frankly, when I was being touched by my uncle, had I had someone I could go to, say, in school, maybe I would have said something a lot sooner rather than waiting, you know, a year and a half. And that was like 10 years. It felt like 10 years. It was, that year and a half was just horrifying. You know.
And you started to explain earlier, and I may have cut you off for your train of thought. I could tell was going towards that the fact that when you and I were young, we were at some point we all heard about stranger danger, or we used to talk about stranger danger, and that was the catchphrase, and it meant the guy in the park with the trench coat.
Right.
It meant the guy that would drive by in his car and grab you and pull you in, and that actually happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is that's only 7% of the abuse that happens. Sexual assaults that occur, 93% of the time, it happens at the hands of someone the child should be able to know, love, or trust. It's 30% of the time, it's an immediate family member, often a parent. And another 30% of the time, it's an extended family member, like your uncle would be, or your grandfather would have been, or somebody you called Uncle Joe was really just your father's war buddy, you know, army buddy or whatever, but somebody that's close to the family. And another 30% of the time, making up the rest of the 93%, it's teachers and coaches and babysitters and law enforcement officers and doctors, pediatricians, and and volunteers in the community and people we know. And
yeah.
we actually give our children over to because we're supposed to be able to trust them with our children. They often form a function that if they were doing good correctly, they would be in the front line of protecting children, but that also puts them as close as they would ever want to be to the children who are vulnerable that they can take advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
So 30% of the time it's a parent, 30% of the time an extended family member, and another 30% of the time someone who's chosen a career or a volunteer position that's that puts them in the community in an obvious situation in its position that you should be able to trust them in.
It just makes me so mad.
It's only 7% of the time that it's a true stranger. Is these amazing thing?
Yeah.
Makes you so mad. Yeah.
It makes me so mad because two things here. Okay. Yeah, I was kidnapped and raped along with 14, 15 other little girls. Because when I was in that courtroom, again, it was dark in that room and where they had us. They were trying to shield us. Huh?
Right. There were 14 or 15 others, and?
Yeah. And
what happened?
Well, what happened was a terrible thing as far as I'm concerned because they had us over in the corner where it was darkened in the courtroom. Big courthouse, you know, New York, it's big. And there were a lot of people in there. And so I had to see this monster, and that's what he was, another monster in my life, come out, and he was going to be sentenced. There was one little girl that represented all of us. She was a doctor's daughter. She had to testify. And she was sitting there with a little hanky, and she was crying off and on. I'm sure she was petrified, that poor little child. I'm thinking about it. I'm visualizing as I'm speaking. And this man, after all that he had done to all of us, only got a few years imprisonment. That was it. That was his sentencing.
See, I think that they plea bargained him down to the one case, and that's why you only heard from one girl.
I don't know.
But I believe. Well, you've told this story many times.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that doesn't make any sense unless they allowed him to plead to one count of, you know, child endangerment or child molestation or something, and that's why he got 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
You can't possibly have molested a dozen kids and gotten 3 years, but you can imagine that he could plea bargain it down to if he agreed to the one case, and then so that's what I suspect happened, and it happens too often that these guys get away with I was going to say murder. They hopefully don't get away with murder. I guess some do, because some slip under the under our. Under the ropes. Under the ropes for years.
They slip through the crack. They slip
through the crack. That's it.
Yeah.
There you go. In fact, we know that every child molester that's arrested, the average number. They did a statistical study. The average number of assaults that were done by a person who was arrested for the first time, the average number was 120 of them.
Mm-hmm.
120 assaults by the average first time arrestee, which means that there are some people who obviously some people are caught after they do 5 or 6 assaults, but there, that also means that there are some people that do hundreds and hundreds of assaults and never get caught.
Right.
That's the average number. 120. There's not 120 kids, by the way. I don't want to say that. That wouldn't be accurate. It's 120 acts of assault. So it could be 10 kids 12 times each, for example, to get to that number of 120. But regardless, it's 120 events of sexual assault before the average sexual offender is caught for the first time.
That's right.
That's astonishing. Again, there are no statistics in any of this, Carol, that aren't astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
Astonishing.
I know it. That's what makes me so mad because I'm trying to get this across to people, and they do listen. They are listening now because of the recent events that have happened, okay? That certainly has helped the cause, if you want to put it that way. Terrible thing that happened to those boys in that school at Penn State. But now people are thinking, whoa, maybe we should start listening. It's all over the papers and the news and, you know, all this other stuff. But when I think about that one little girl up on that stand, and she's representing us then, and then there's a plea bargain going on, and that's why there's only 3 years. I remember standing there in that courtroom, and one little girl standing next to me had urinated. She was so frightened, excuse me, all over the floor. I slipped in it. It was awful. And I was thinking to myself, I'm 8 years old. I wasn't quite 9 yet. And when he gets out, I will be 11. And he knows where I live. Okay? And I always thought to myself, you know, he's going to come and get me again. He knows where I live. And I told on him, you know, and I was very frightened. But,
sure.
You know, the little girl that lived down the street from me who wasn't a part of this, she was very, very smart for a little 8-year-old. She said, you know, Carol, I know that what you're going through is awful, but, you know, this way we get him off the street. He's off the street. And, of course, we didn't know how long he was going to get at that point. But now he can't hurt other little kids. It's better that you told. And she says, I'm so sorry. And she says, I'm going to start sleeping with baseball bats. That's what she said. But the point is, when you get, you know, abused like this, the very worst thing that a child can do is to hold it in and not tell the story, you know, to walk around with that terrible fear inside. Because I turned to panic as soon as I was doing. This is when it came in. This is not a good thing. Kids have to learn to tell. And if we can get the schools to be more open and to start talking about, you know, child abuse, and parents, for God's sake, out there, I know there's people listening after the show. There's tons of people listening after the show now. We have a good following. You know, sit down with your children, talk about sexual abuse. Talk about the body with your children. The earlier you teach your children their body parts, I don't care if it's 2 years old. In fact, that's the recommended age many times, even earlier if you think they can understand. But when a child is having a bath, talk about this is your head and this is your nose and these are your toes, this is your stomach, this is your breast, this is your vagina. If it's a boy, it's your penis. Don't be ashamed, because if you're ashamed, then the kid will be ashamed. And he or she may not tell you. Okay? We have to start being more open with our children. This is a part of parenting. This is the way to keep your child safer. And that child deserves to be safe. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there who are criminals. They have criminal minds and they commit criminal acts. And 4 houses down from me, there's kids that have been, you know, in trouble. They've been touched. Well, if it's down 4 houses down from me, well, heck, it's 4 houses down from you, too. You know, that's just the way it is. And we have to teach our children. We have to teach them. It's a part of parenting. It should be a part of parenting. So let it start at home first, okay?
Right.
And then also, in the schools, yeah.
And that's a call, of course, called prevention.
Yes.
It's the teaching to a child what to expect in life and to arm them with enough knowledge to recognize when they're being abused. You do this at age-appropriate stages, mm-hmm. and you increase the knowledge as they get older. But the vocabulary of it should be taught, I believe, should be taught when you're teaching them, like you just described. From the earliest age, you know, we should not be reluctant to identify a penis as a penis or a nipple mm-hmm. as a nipple. You know,
right.
Here's your eye, here's your nose. Yeah, here's your eye, here's your nose, here's your nipple. You know, and the kid will just totally accept that as the name of the body part. And it's no big deal then from then on, from the rest of their life. We tend to say, you know, here's your wee-wee, you know, instead of penis, you know. But
we don't do that, but other people do that. Right,
we as a society do this, okay? Mm. We do it as But the point is that you start doing having conversations at the earliest age that you think, and at age appropriate levels, when the child is very young, as a toddler, and then you increase the knowledge as they get older, and you certainly are always, as part of what you're teaching them, reminding them that you are someone that they can trust, and there's nothing that they can bring to you that you're not willing to talk about or that they should be embarrassed about, and that you know, you will take their questions seriously and answer them to the best of your ability, and you'll, if you don't know something, you'll find out for them or with them, you know. And so you keep the lines of communications open. That's just as vital as anything else, that they feel that they have a parent that they can trust.
Right.
Unfortunately, as we've said, you know, a lot of the time, a big percentage of the time, the parent is the molester. So we cannot trust this only to parents.
No.
We must also use the opportunity we have when kids are in school or in clubs or in churches or whatever, other places that children gather, to do some prevention talking to them, again, age-appropriate levels, so that they are empowered to recognize when the molester comes along in their life, and know something about what to do about it. They need to tell, and they need to keep telling until they've told someone who will take action and makes them feel better.
Right.
You know,
absolutely, you know, and this is why it's so important that the schools do take part, and that's what Aaron's trying to do, Aaron Marin, is to get this information in the schools, to educate the educators, and then also to let children know that they can come to them for anything, because if they are being abused at home by a parent, God forbid, and of course, that's not uncommon. I hate to say that, but that's truth. They have someone else to go to. They have someone else to go to, who, and they know that they're going to be listened to, and they're not going to be judged, because this is a part of what we teach the teachers, and also the social workers. You know, to there's a proper way of taking information, and there are courses actually that other places offer. You know, the right way to ask children questions, and we have that right on our webpage. It's right here. If people look up under the resource buttons, recovery and so forth, we have all kinds of information. The proper way not to interrogate a child. You see, if you interrogate a child who's been sexually abused, that kid's going to clam up. There's a proper way of asking a child about child abuse. Okay.
Right.
And
right.
You know, and I know certainly too that when I was in the police department and they would ask me all kinds of questions, they were barking at me.
Right.
You know, and because
well,
and
this comes under the classification of what we call intervention. So the
right.
First thing we talked about is prevention. Prevention is preparing the child. Intervention has to do with learning ourselves what we can do and how to do it when we suspect child abuse might be going on. Intervention is, for us, a series of things that we can be taught. We can either be taught formally, or we can be taught by looking at our website. It has a lot of information about intervention.
You bet.
And to know what signs to look for in children that are around us all the time that might indicate that they've been traumatized. And these signs may not be physical at all. They may be emotional. In fact, most of them are emotional or behavioral. Changes in behavior and emotion are what we'll most often recognize, unless the child is being violently traumatized, where we might see some bruises and scrapes and things. But even those children who are abused physically, often the perpetrator is clever enough to hide those, you know, under places where clothing will cover. So we don't even see those. But the point is that we will see the behavior, and we will see the changes in emotional states, what they are, and then how to approach a child, how to talk to a child that's a little younger as opposed to a child that's sort of a middle-aged child or sort of an older-aged child, teenager. They're a little different, the techniques that you use and the things that you might say. And then having learned of a suspicion of child abuse, what do you do about it? How do you report it? And where do you report it? Mm-hmm. All these things are on our website, of course, but this all comes under the heading of intervention. We don't want people to go out and go after the pedophile themselves. That's not our job as a community member. It is our job to report child abuse. to the appropriate authorities, then let them investigate it and let them go after the pedophile. And they will do that. They're waiting for our call. Every 10 seconds, somebody get one, as I said
mm-hmm.
before.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not the community's job to be a vigilante. It is our job to do the reporting, to be the eyes and ears, and then to report what we find out and then let the investigators take over from there. And then the fact is that we also have to be aware that our children are all on the internet, and that's another place intervention wise we have to prepare ourselves for what kinds of behaviors to look for on children who maybe are spending too much time on the internet, or where they spend their time on the internet might be important, and certainly who they spend their time on the internet with is very important, because that's an additional, literally a different world where pedophiles have learned, instead of hiding in the bushes, they hide in the chat room. And they hide in the chat room, under the guise of a created pedophilic attractive profile,
mm-hmm.
attractive to the teenager that they're going to try and draw out. To the 13-year-old girl, they'll be a 17-year-old boy, but they might be really a 25-year-old man, or a 35-year-old man, or a 45-year-old man.
You can be
anything you want, and the girl can't tell the difference just by the interaction on the computer. And these people are really clever. They use the language and the lingo of the children of today's youth, and they know all the popular things with the kids,
mm-hmm.
and eventually, a lot of these kids are drawn out into the real world, thinking they're about to go meet that 17-year-old boy that the 13-year-old girl is so attracted to,
mm-hmm.
and so she agrees to go to the mall on a Saturday afternoon, which is not an unusual activity for her, perhaps. Especially if she's going to go with a group of girls. Maybe mommy lets them do that now that they're 13 and 14. But she's really, she doesn't know it, but she's going to meet some of the 35-year-old man.
Right.
And all kinds of trouble can ensue from that, obviously. So how do you intervene there? How do you even know? Who do you report it to? And how do you, how do you ensure that your child, they're going to have continuous access to the internet, so it's not a matter of denying them access, but it might be a matter of regulating where they can go and how often they can go there. But don't fool yourself. The internet is everywhere, and it's in every person's house, it's at every library, in every school, and it is inescapable, and it's in every corner of that child's life, on their cell phone as well as on their desktop, that they can have internet access. So these are all intervention things that we need to teach ourselves so that we can arm ourselves to be ready to recognize and take action, recognize suspicion of child abuse and take action that's appropriate, and maybe save some kids' lives in the process, literally.
Well, one thing parents have to do, too, though I'm looking here, but I'm not going to find it now because I'm looking for it. But I had a wonderful site for that, with the computers and for children. For God's sake, what parents should watch out for. And it came off of our site. We have a wonderful web page. We just simply do. It's a wonderful thing. It offers a wealth of information. I keep using that word because that's what it is. You've put together quite a web page there, website. But first of all, kids shouldn't be allowed to have computers in their own bedroom. I hate to say this. I know at times I get flack, from people because they say, well, the TV's going on in the living room and there's noise around them. They want to use it for their homework, or they do want to chat with their friends, or they want to play, games and stuff like this, whatever they're into. But quite frankly, your kid is at risk when you're doing that. If you're not watching your child, if the computer isn't somewhere where a parent can walk by and, they have their own lingo, too. Speak about lingo, parent looking over shoulder. There's like a parent, like a PLS or something, however which way it is. Kids have to be careful, and you have to sit down with your children. The parents have to learn that just how bad the internet is, the how many perverts there are, and how many pedophiles. I had a case not long ago, I told you about it, with a 15-year-old boy, and there's a 25-year-old guy who was after him. Now, he told me his age. What's a 25-year-old with a 15-year-old? Well, I went back and forth with that kid, but the kid is now away from that 25-year-old man. Now, kids have to be taught, and I constantly tell my granddaughter, you know, if someone's on there and you have a choice to either be their friend or not be their friend, if they look suspicious, just simply don't. Sometimes they are. You know, there was a 45-year-old on my daughter's site, or my granddaughter's site one night. That's crazy. What does a 45-year-old want with a 12? She was 12 years old at the time. So I pointed that out to her. And then there was a 19-year-old, okay, who wanted to get to know her. No. And I don't like you in sites like this anyway. This is what I'm saying. The internet is a wonderful thing. You can learn everything and anything from the internet. You don't need encyclopedias anymore, do you? You've got the internet. But it also can be a scary place for kids to be because they do meet strange people on there. So the adults, you know, the parents, they have to keep a better watch on their children, who they're chatting to, these chat rooms, these game rooms. And tell your children, don't give out any personal information at all. Because if you do, these hackers out there and these pedophiles, they're so smart. They really are. A lot of them are very smart in some ways.
Let's touch on one topic that's related to this, and that's missing children.
I want to use
this as a segue to another set of statistics that ought to be shocking. You know, we know that 2,100 children a day go missing, according to the Missing and Exploited Children site. That's the number. And they say 75% of those children disappear because a grandmother will grab them up or a father who doesn't have custody will grab them up. So they're the result of a familial dispute over custody often. But that still leaves 500 a day plus kids out there who disappear, go missing for other reasons. And a lot of them are runaways. They run away from home because they're not happy with whatever their home life is. And, of course, a lot of teenagers get filled with angst and at some point could at least consider running away from home, you know, to escape home. And a lot of them actually do it. Some of those kids are coerced away from home by people on the internet, is my point.
Mm-hmm.
And we just simply don't know. There are hundreds of kids every week whose missing case is never resolved. In other words, they vanish. And I'm going to say that again. There are hundreds of kids every week in our country whose case is never resolved. They vanish. We don't know what happens to them. The lucky ones end up, if they're in the case of a runaway, they end up on a street, and they get recognized by a police officer, like the fellow that we talked about this weekend on the radio show who was discovered in Los Angeles. His father had put him on a bus on the East Coast when he turned 18, and he said, here's $200 on a list of homeless shelters. Good luck. put him on a bus.
Crazy.
You know,
it's terrible.
A lot of kids will run away from home when they're, you know, left to their own devices, they'll show up at a big city, in a bus station, a train station, an airport, with a little bit of money perhaps in their hand if they've thought about it at all ahead of time. That money runs out very quickly, and then they're befriended by someone who turns out to be interested in turning them out. And this is what we call trafficked children. It's a big problem. We talk about it. We see. Articles about it all the time now, and a bigger and bigger acknowledgement that our country, you know, is as guilty as having trafficked people in it, including children for sexual use, as any other. And these kids are turned out by actually pimps, you know, obviously, who the average age for this, by the way, is 13 years old.
Right.
That's the average age for the turned out, you know, pimp who's a runaway. They're used for a few years. If they're lucky to survive, they get very screwed up in their head. If they're found and sent back home, they don't want to go home. That's where they ran away from to begin with. So they might go, they might be sent right back to the same situation they originally ran away from. And there are very few programs that allow them the opportunity for a bridge back to a more normal life. Very few. You know, across the country, only a couple hundred beds exist that really are devoted to this issue. And yet there are thousands and thousands, 100,000 new teenage prostitutes every year in our country. 100,000. And yet those are the lucky ones because at least they live. Because there are hundreds of children every week in our country. I said there's five a week who die of neglect. Those are the ones we know die of neglect. They there is a body.
Yeah.
And there are scars, or there is evidence. But there are hundreds of children a week whose cases continuously are unresolved. And that means that they vanish, and we don't know what happened to them.
That's
now,
right.
A lot of them are used sexually and killed, and their bodies are dumped. And, of course, the smaller the kid, the easier the body is to hide, get rid of.
Yeah.
And the FBI says that if that's the intention of a pedophile, that in 74% of the cases, the child is sexually assaulted and killed within 3 hours of their abduction. So not only are these cases unresolved, but they might have been, come to death's door within the first day of their assault, of their being taken, of their going missing. Because 96% of the time, it's within 48 hours they're dead.
That's right. That's right. You and I were both very lucky, Bill. We were tremendously lucky. You know, I'm looking now. If people are listening later on, if you go just to the resource button, we call it button. And you find the missing. If you just drop down, you know, you have to just click on the resource button. You can see find the missing. And Bill's referring to find the missing. This is the missing and exploited children. And you click into missingkids.com. It gives you a wealth of information. And again, it is 800,000 children reported missing each year. That's crazy.
Right.
More than 2,000 a day.
Right. It's actually over 2,100 now. Right.
Oh, so they, you know, so it just keeps climbing. People, wake up out there. Wake up.
Right. Right. So that's the second aspect. Let's get to the third aspect while we still have a couple of minutes left in the show, and that's recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked specifically about the problem as an overview, and then we talked specifically about the four different kinds of child abuse that exist and the three different parts of dealing with the issue. The first two we've discussed, prevention and intervention, and the third one is recovery. That's the third thing that we at NASCA talk about a lot about and have many resources about. And the fact of the matter is that, as I said, there are 42 million American adults who have experienced sexual assault and are now adults. And that number grows by a million, roughly a year, an additional million or so a year, a little less. But it's growing all the time because people turn 18 all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds of thousands of kids turn 18 all the time, so they become classified as adult survivors. And then there's an additional similar number of adults who have survived the traumas of physical assault or violence, emotional trauma, or neglect. So the number really of traumatized adults who need to trauma recovery is hundreds, is tens of millions, 80 million, 90 million, maybe 100 million adult survivors of one of those four kinds of trauma. There are a variety of paths to recovery, and we list about 10 different styles of recovery, all of which we believe are legitimate paths, or they wouldn't be on our website. And we go into a certain degree of explanation about the different kinds there are, and they include things like psychiatry and ministry and therapy and counseling and 12-step groups and nonprofits that have their own process of recovery and coaching. We had a life coach on last night who did a very good show explaining to us what she does for her clients to come to her, and that's a valid way. In other words, there are a variety of different paths, and it's not so much we are not here to promote one path over another path. We're here to promote the concept of recovery. For any of you who are out there listening, who are an adult survivor and really haven't gotten to the root of your problem, which might be the trauma that you experienced dozens of years ago, you know, we offer these different ideas of recovery. Because recovery begins, we always say, Carol, with the revealing of the secret, the honest revealing of the secret in a environment where you can trust the people or person you're telling, mm-hmm. and you feel safe.
That's
and then
right.
That's just the beginning. It's just the beginning. You need to keep telling, and you need to keep talking, but that first time you ever tell your story in that kind of environment, it will be terrifying. It will be very, very frightening if most of our friends' experience is similar to what you'll experience. You will be that's why you haven't done it before. It's because of the fear of being judged or the embarrassment behind it or the humiliation or the anger, the amount of anger. And these are all symptoms of child abuse that could have occurred, like I said, you know, 40 years ago, but you're still living with today unless you're on a journey of recovery. Now, we're not guaranteeing that all these things will vanish. They won't evaporate, certainly.
Mm-mm.
Some will get better to the degree where you don't consider them over time. Others will linger on, but the point is your life will be much better and you will become more and more comfortable with who you are and what you went through. And I call it being comfortable in my own skin. I accept my child abuse story for what it was. I don't live in it anymore, but neither have I ever forgotten it or any part of it. In fact, I'm still, in a way, discovering things about it, Carol, and this is nearly 30 years later, 30 years of recovery later.
I know. You know, I think we all do that, honey. You know, I'm serious. I really believe that. That's why I say that I'm 85%. And that's okay, all right? I'm so thankful. I thank God that I got up to 85% healed, okay?
Right.
But I still have some quirks that I speak about at times. But that's okay. I can live with those. The point is, had I not gotten help, my help came in a different direction. It can come from psychiatrists. It can come from the church, which was my case. It doesn't matter where it comes from. The point is you get help. Yes, tell your story and then get help and get on that healing journey so that you can be the best person that you were meant to be and above all, become happy. Because people who are walking around with that secret who don't tell, they're not happy. I certainly wasn't happy until I told my secret, okay? Good Lord, no. I made so many mistakes in my life, you know, before I told my secret, and I can look back now upon all the things that I had done that I wished I hadn't have done, but I had to forgive myself for that. I had to forgive myself because I wouldn't have done those things, I'm quite sure, had I had the proper help from day one, from when mm-hmm. I was a child, if I had someone that I could turn to. Okay, so, but that doesn't mean you can't heal later on. You can heal, and that's the beauty of the thing. Is the fact that once you tell your secret to whomever you choose, you go on to your healing journey and you get the help that you need, and you will become so happy. You know, you'll just be, it's like a weight is lifted off of you.
Exactly what it is. Oh. It's a burden to carry that secret, and that burden has been on your shoulders ever since it started. That's why I say it's the civil rights issue of our time, I think, because it begins to change the child's life. From that point on, and you cannot have a life, you cannot have, you know, the benefits of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness when you're under that kind of stress and weight mm-hmm. on account of how you were a criminal act that was created against you, and it is a criminal act. You know, child abuse, acts of child abuse, all four types are criminal. They have different kinds of statutes that regulate them, but they're all criminal. And a lot of them are obviously serious felony criminals. Pedophiles are not just, you know, sick. They're also criminals.
That's right.
And people who do domestic violence or violate their family violently, including their children, they're criminals.
Mm-hmm.
So you have suffered from that since it began. And until you get into recovery, and you're still suffering from it in recovery, but the burden gets lifted when you tell your secret in that environment I described before. And as I say, you can take the path of a church group like Carol did, a 12-step program like I did, a counseling session like a lot of people will go to, a group. I like group discussions. Because you find out there that you're not alone. That's one of the things we fear, is that we're never going to be understood. No one, this has never happened to anybody else. I'll be judged because, it's never happened like this to anybody else. That kind of thing. We feel very alone in this. And we find out when we talk in a group, we become a member of a group that we go back to over and over again, that everybody in the group feels the same feelings.
Yeah.
And, the facts of our abuse might be different, but the feelings and the reactions to it are almost identical. It's amazing.
That's right.
They're the same.
Right.
So you find out you're not alone when you do it in a group. You can, another one I didn't mention is art therapy. There are people who do what's called art therapy of different kinds, and if that's valid for you, fine. They'll use writing or painting or music or some other form of art as at least a part of the. We learned recently, we talked about, Marley's mission, which is a group of children who go to ride horses, or not to ride horses, to be around horses.
Right, right.
In Northeast Pennsylvania, there's a group called Marley's Mission. They're one of our recent special guests a couple months ago, I guess, now.
Mm-hmm.
And they have come up with this concept. It's a combination of therapy, actual therapy with psychologists, child psychologists, and being around these big, beautiful animals and interacting with the animals, and they use the animals as part of the therapy for the children, and it's working very well. So, there can be all kinds of legitimate tools that can be used, but the point is, tell the secret and tell it in an appropriate space and then keep telling it. And then take advantage of the suggestions that the group will give you or your counselor will give you or your priest will give you of actions that you can take that are going to require work on your part. I mean, recovery is work.
Yes, it is.
It's not easy, but it's worth it. And it is work, right, Carol? It doesn't just descend on you because you decide it one day.
No.
And unfortunately, what we tend to do is we tend to treat the symptoms of our child abuse rather than the abuse itself. So we'll treat the overeating problem we have or the drug abuse problem that we have or the gambling addiction that we have.
Right.
Or we'll go to Codependence Anonymous groups. When the root problem is that we were molested as a child and we've never learned how to live life on life's terms.
You have to get to the core issue. That's what it amounts to. The core issue is you, okay? It's what you've been through, and you have to face it and work on it. But you know what? It can be done. Recovery is a wonderful thing. You can go a few steps forward, and once you get on your healing journey, as I like to call it, as the healing journey. And then sometimes you go a few steps backwards. It doesn't matter, and then you go forward again because we have to look at ourselves too because we are not perfect people. I always bring this up. We have to look honestly at ourselves. We too have made mistakes, okay? And you have to forgive yourself for making those mistakes and make an honest assessment of yourself as well. That's why it is work. But at the day's end, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And all the things that you're going through, all the fears, all the feelings of inadequacies that you have, all the poor choices that you've made in the past, all the things that you're doing today, and there is hope for tomorrow. That's the point. There is hope for tomorrow. You can
That's
be
right.
a happy person. You absolutely can. And those guys out there or those women
That's
out
right.
there, who go home and they beat their children or they're mean to their spouses who have been abused, okay, they can heal too, okay? It's just that they have to realize that it's time to go and get help. If you don't get
Carol,
help, this is what happens.
We have 45 seconds left. So
oh, my God.
Have time to thank you for being on the show tonight and remind people. Carol and I have been talking tonight about the fact that, people's eyes are starting to open. We now need their hearts to open, their mouths to open. We need them to become active, and we need their feet to be active. We need a movement, and it was going to take all of us in American society, not just those who are adult survivors, but all of us are going to have to bring our talents to bear on this issue, because if we don't, you know, our country will suffer a tremendous amount, because the children are the true treasure of America. Thank you for listening tonight, and join us again tomorrow night when we'll have a special guest, Anna Spivey, whose new novel, Ebony the Beloved, explores child abuse and domestic violence, and we're going to hear from her tomorrow night. May God bless you, God bless America, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse.
Blog Talk Radio.